Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. I hope the first subject that we cover today won't be too painful. The subject is pain. What to try and what to skip for pain. If you're aching somewhere, several surprising strategies may offer you some relief. I found this article in the Consumer Reports publication on health. It was published in, August of 2021. So I received it even before August occurred. And away we go. Rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, low back pain, and neck pain are on the rise around the globe, in part because of contributing factors such as obesity, poor nutrition, smoking, and sedentary lifestyles. And of course, all sorts of aches and pains can become more common as we age. Hence, it's estimated that up to 60% of older adults experience chronic pain in their bones, joints, ligaments, muscles, and perhaps tendons. Seniors with such musculoskeletal pain are often undertreated and simply given medication. But many older adults already take multiple drugs, and adding more can lead to interactions and unwanted side effects. It's best to work with your doctor on a multi-pronged, personalized plan, and some non-medication options can be quite effective. And the article that I'm talking about today offers four common ones. One, of course, is physical activity. A second is massage and acupuncture. A third is meditation and yoga. And fourth, supplements. Let's look at physical activity first. If it hurts to move, why do it? The less active you are, the more muscles stiffen up, causing more pain. That, according to Benjamin Kligler, who is executive director of the Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation at the Veterans Health Administration. Stronger muscles put less strain on pain-prone joints. Simply walking for as long as you can on most days can be helpful. Kligler says that he recommends this, but if it hurts, try walking in water or doing water aerobics. Physical therapy, or PT, which includes expert-designed exercises to ease discomfort and to improve function, may be key if you're too uncomfortable to start moving. Now, for massage and acupuncture, research suggests that both therapies may work well for musculoskeletal pain. A review of 39 clinical trials, which was published in the Journal of Pain in 2018, concluded that acupuncture, that is, the insertion of fine needles into specific body points, was effective for both back and neck pain and osteoarthritis. A review of 26 studies published in the Journal of Physiotherapy in 2015 found that massage offered short-term relief for shoulder pain or for knee osteoarthritis. It also helped people with low back pain move more easily. And then the third category, meditation and yoga. Mindfulness meditation, where you might sit quietly for a few minutes or longer while noticing your breath. This strengthens your mind's ability to sustain attention and focus and direct your attention intentionally to something other than your pain, according to Dr. Fidel Zaidan at the University of California, San Diego. In a review of almost 40 clinical trials, it was published in 2017 in the Annals of Behavioral Medicine, mindfulness meditation was associated with a small drop in pain. It was found that it can be a very powerful tool when used with other non-drug therapies to relieve pain.
Go.
While some studies have found that yoga, which can include deep breathing, stretching, and strengthening, may be helpful, in some cases it may worsen discomfort or it may cause new injuries. If you're new to yoga, look for classes that are described as restorative or gentle. A safer option for older adults may in fact be Tai Chi, which uses slow and gentle movements to stretch and to strengthen muscles. And then there's category four, the supplements. Supplements with glucosamine and chondroitin, substances found in cartilage, are often touted as easing osteoarthritis pain, but research is mixed on this. Both can also interfere with drugs such as blood thinners. However, turmeric, a spice sometimes sold in supplement form, may be more promising. In all, supplements are only loosely regulated, so you can't always be sure of exactly what they contain. So you must be cautious in this regard. And finally, we come to the question, can cannabis or CBD help? People with chronic pain are increasingly turning to cannabis or CBD, which is an ingredient in marijuana and hemp that does not produce a high. For a 2017 report, the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine reviewed hundreds of studies of cannabis, which remains illegal in a number of states, and found that substantial evidence for its use could be in chronic pain. Cannabis can be helpful and relatively safe for older adults, according to Peter Greenspoon, MD. But it may cause dizziness or confusion in high doses, may affect blood pressure and heart rate, or it may interact with medications such as blood thinners and anti-seizure drugs. If you want to try cannabis for pain, be sure to tell your primary care provider and start low and go slow to find a dose that helps your symptoms with a minimum of side effects. And that, the advice from Consumer Reports in their publication on health in August 2021. And now we go from pain to the South China Sea. And while I'm introducing this article, you might want to go and get your atlas and turn to the page that has East Asia on it and the Western Pacific, especially Southeast Asia, China, and the island realm in the Western Pacific, like the Philippines, Taiwan, and so forth. China has been making sweeping claims in the South China Sea. It has exerted its naval might throughout the South China Sea, sometimes in zones that belong to other countries. And this needs a little explanation. The South China Sea territorial disputes that are going on now have long simmered between the countries of Brunei, China, Taiwan, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam. China claims almost the entire body of water, which stretches across more than 1 million square miles, and has expanded its military presence by transforming tiny islands and reefs into airstrips. Tensions have been dialing up since last March, when more than 200 Chinese vessels entered waters near the Philippine Islands. And with China-U.S. relations at their chilliest in decades, the South China Sea symbolizes a wider competition for influence between the world's top two economies. Why is the control of the sea so contested? The United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, called UNCLOS, formalizes countries' rights and responsibilities on the world's oceans. The convention established the idea of exclusive economic zones, that is, the area stretching 200 nautical miles from a state's coastline, in an area where the state had special rights to exploit resources, and where countries' EEZs, or exclusive economic zones, overlap. UNCLOS says that they must negotiate. UNCLOS was supposed to stop conflict by creating clarity over who had the right to exploit resources in these exclusive economic zones. Countries began to extend their baselines and argue over continental shelves and realize they have overlapping EEZs. These disputes go back decades. But China claims everything within what this article calls the 9-dash line. It's a line which stretches from Taiwan in the north to Malaysia in the south. And it's a very, ill-defined, vaguely defined boundary, which is purportedly based on old maps. In 2016, an international tribunal at The Hague ruled that there was no legal basis for such a claim. But China rejected the decision, and other countries have continued to complain about Chinese vessels in their waters. Other claimants are essentially being bullied out of their own EEZs and out of what is supposed to be an area of freedom of passage. Well, just what does this have to do with the United States? The South China Sea is thought to contain huge oil and natural gas reserves, and around one third of the world's maritime trade is estimated to pass through it, a trade that is worth more than $3 trillion every year. The United States sees free movement through the area as essential, and it conducts freedom of navigation naval patrols to protect it. From the U.S. perspective, the so-called nine-dashed line map is an attempt by China to privatize the global commons. U.S. officials have framed China's behavior as a challenge to the rule of law. The USA also has important allies in Southeast Asia and aims to push back on China's increasing dominance in the region. It's not only Southeast Asia, but the world has now awakened to the fact that they can't live without China. In China's eyes, the South China Sea is its backyard, and Southeast Asian countries are wary of alienating a key economic partner. These countries say they've always lived under the dragon. The Southeast Asian attitude is that it cannot run away from the Chinese shadow. Well, what's next? Many regional economies took a beating during the pandemic. In the meantime, China has been pushing ahead, building artificial islands and military bases. It's probably angered a lot of countries in the region because it makes it seem like China is not only continuing in a very assertive approach, this is actually taking advantage of their vulnerabilities. And so far, the U.S. has maintained a hard line against China and continues to conduct freedom of navigation operations. The U.S. has also pressured other democracies to take a stronger stance against Beijing. But in the South China Sea, a unified Southeast Asian effort has a better chance than the U.S. and China sitting down and trying to resolve it, according to some authorities. Recently, some countries have taken small steps toward resolving competing interests. For example, in April last, Malaysia and Brunei agreed to jointly develop oil and gas fields along their maritime boundary. Malaysia and Vietnam also have indicated they will sign an agreement in an attempt to settle their differences. And this past June, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations and China pledged to avoid escalating tensions any further. And now from the South China Sea, we go to the more productive side of procrastination. In an article, Christian Science Monitor Weekly, July 26th of this year, Melissa Moore, who is a columnist with the Christian Science Monitor, had an etymological insight. She was playing solitaire on her phone. After getting sucked into pet videos on Instagram and seeing what friends were up to on Facebook, she realized that the Latin word for tomorrow, crass, C-R-A-S, is in the middle of procrastination. That's what procrastination is, putting something off until tomorrow. Writers from the time of Cicero onward have warned that putting things off is imprudent. The poet Edward Young declared in 1742 that procrastination is the thief of time. And our friend Ben Franklin, who also devised an ambitious 13-week plan to achieve moral perfection, supposedly advised us against never putting off until tomorrow what you can do today. Well, procrastination is often associated with laziness, but it fails somewhere between idleness and the frantic busyness that is often seen as a virtue in American society. Procrastinators are doing something, just not what they had planned or are supposed to be doing. Putting something off can even result in what psychologists call productive procrastination. In your efforts to avoid one difficult task, you actually end up accomplishing something else, as when Sir Isaac Newton procrastinated during his alchemy research and he discovered calculus. The word, if not the habit, of procrastination came into English in 1548, but our language is full of words that disparage a state of not working. Being idle was stigmatized in Old English, and today the word has a variety of negative senses, like having no employment, or lazy, or sloth, or disinclination to labor. This has been usually one of the seven deadliest sins, idleness. The ancient Romans, though, valued busyness and constant activity as much as any modern productivity guru. And also, they had a mostly positive word for time spent not working, and that word was otium. This was a period for philosophical discussion of music and art, gardening perhaps, things that enrich one's life but don't further one's career. Otium is like procrastination in that it involves doing something that is not work, but differs in that it acknowledges that these things are also worth doing. Well, does English have a word that captures the positive connotations of otium? Leisure isn't quite right. It is free time, but doesn't carry the same sense that this time is important. I think that Melissa Maurer will think more about this tomorrow. We're going to end today with these two items from what we might call health and science. I have some bad news for you. An international study of unprecedented size has concluded that the aging process is sadly unstoppable. A species ages at a relatively fixed rate once it reaches adulthood. So I guess You just sit back and enjoy it. It is fun if you let it. And then there's this. In the world of science of the dinosaurs, scientists broadly agree that a large extraterrestrial object slammed into the Earth 66 million years ago, wiping out the dinosaurs. But a new study proposes that instead of an asteroid, the planet was bombarded by high-speed chunks of an icy comet that broke apart when it flew too close to the sun. And that, my friends, is the end of it for today. Please come back. Enjoy having you here. Work very hard to make sure that you're informed and entertained. You take care, because I want to keep you as an audience, huh? And it looks like that we didn't quite finish all that we were intending to do today, but that's life, isn't it? And so I'm going to go with my friend Willie Nelson, and we're going to go down the road again as we look for items, stories that fit into a little of this, a little of that. Come back and see us.